All right, welcome in again to See Ball, Get Ball. I'm your host, David Pollack. Brent Rollins joins me every single week. He writes for Rivals PFF. Big day today. We got Marcus Freeman on, one of the cooler coaches, I think, in college football. I mean, you sit down and talk to him. Yeah, super cool. Super personality, super chill, but like, you know good and well when he played linebacker at Ohio State, like would knock your face off and compete. And talked a little bit about Brent, about his household and having – I said, was it harder to coach 100-plus kids or come home to 6 kids? Because he's got a litter. Like, he's got a bunch of them at the house. But he was talking about managing his schedule and how it can be difficult. But just everything he says is top-notch. And then there was some kind of big – quarterback news, right? Like some kinda dude went.
I thought you were going to the golf tournament first, but you know, there was some college football news.
We can start there, because did you watch that whole tournament? Did you get enthralled in the Masters?
So, just to give some background, I like golf. I enjoy playing golf. I don't get to play it as much as I would like to play golf. I rarely watch golf, but I watched every second of that on Sunday.
You didn't watch Friday, Saturday, though. Like, you're not watching the whole tournament.
I had to go out of town, and after driving 16 hours out of a 24-hour period this weekend, sitting home on Sunday and watching that was quite enjoying, and it was riveting television. Like, that's as good as golf gets, I think, in terms of the ebbs and flows and ups and downs and keeping you engaged the whole time. That was as good as it gets, and awesome for Rory to win.
That's the best you can do without Tiger, because obviously Tiger's the whale in the sport. And as much as you don't want to admit it or not, like when Tiger goes to a tournament, like the viewership climbs through the roof, the attendance climbs through the roof. It always has been. And that's why he's been such a big part of golf, obviously, in his success story. But man, it was so strange, Brent, because I relate to fierce competitors most of the time, and I relate to killers, and I relate to guys that like, kind of like Bryson DeChambeau, probably a little more. That's kind of like, beep, I don't really care what you think. Like, screw you. Yeah. But because of the stakes and because of Rory's past, like I found myself cheering him on. Like, but I felt bad because I felt bad. Like, it was kind of like, man, please just kind of win this thing. Just kind of find a way not to screw it up. That's what made me feel bad. Like, when he went to 12. And he hits 3 wood off the tee and lays up, and then lays up to a good distance. I think it was like a 7-iron. And then he shanks a chip.
Yeah.
That is the equivalent of peeing down your leg in any way, shape, or form. Like, it was as bad as it gets. But again, jump back on and then just kept riding the emotional wave that was just – it was – I bet he was exhausted last night from the – all the pressure and all the ups and downs and having to go get it. I bet he was just literally done.
The most mentally anguishing sport. And you can just see you know what he's going through. And by the way, they get to walk. It's not like they just jump in the cart and they got to go real quick and hit the next shot. And they're trying to, like you, play as fast as you possibly can. Like, it's, they've got to go and just walk and chill and think about it. There's so much time to think. And you know that he's, man, I really screwed that up. You just got to keep going through it. And it's kind of those one of us moments where he's just like everybody else, where it's shooting great shot after great shot. And then all of a sudden he shoots the worst shot you've ever seen. It was amazing. I was happy for him. I was mainly because of, like you said, didn't want him to fail. I didn't want him to fail
again.
Exactly.
Like, but I was also happy he earned it. Like, he won with a birdie, and he made a – it wasn't a huge putt, but he made it. But the best person in the world, by the way, to be on Sunday was Justin Rose, because never did he ever think he had a chance. He had no pressure the whole time. Yeah. He had no pressure till 17, and then he bogeys, because every time it swung and who's that big Swedish sucker, Åberg? Like, he got some pressure on him and turned into – he melted. Like, he melted on 18. I think he cost himself $700,000, by the way, too, which is outstanding, crazy, nuts. But like, Rory had it on him the whole time. He had the magnifying glass with the sun just ant-frying him. Like, just absolutely you know, blazing him up, and he still answered, which was it was cool to watch. It was the vindication and the emotion. Like, yeah, that's what you would relate to the most. Like, that emotion is so cool. That I was telling Lindsay, my wife, I was like, that's why you do sports. Like, that's why you watch sports. Like, that moment right there. I remember mm-hmm. the Phil Mickelson moment when he made it finally, and he goes, oh my gosh. And like, you could see the weight of the world, you know, mm-hmm. lifted off of him. But now, you know, Rory, the sixth person ever to win a career Grand Slam. Like, that's all time. I'm one of the best to ever do this. And we've known about his talent for so many years. So to finally come through in the clutch was super cool. And I bet just like everybody else, you found yourself, whether you liked Rory or not, like, you found yourself cheering him on.
Yep. It makes you also appreciate Tiger, because that was kind of his superpower, was that nothing fazed him in a way.
Nothing.
And he'd watch everybody else melt while he just stayed here the whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah. But I figure folks probably are not tuning in, and thanks to those that are tuning in, to hear our golf opinions.
Probably not.
Or about our golf game. By the way, how many people are you hitting if you have to tee off with, you know, hundreds of people lined up down right off the tee?
Zero. Typing it.
You got it. Yeah, no, I'm hurting someone really badly in that case. But, yeah, there was some college football news. And it happened quickly. It went from, hey, there's negotiations going on with Nico Iamaleava and Tennessee, to Nico wasn't a practice, to Josh Heupel coming out and saying, we're moving on without Nico, to now Nico being in the portal in a heartbeat. Yeah. That changed. And there's so many ways to look at this. So many. What's just general thought? First thing that comes to your mind.
My first thought was, this is our new world of college football, and I don't like it. That was my first thought. You know, because it's free agency, but it's not really free agency. Like, it's a contract, but it's not a contract. And that's what kind of pisses me off, is there's just so much of this up in the air crap, like, of so many non-rules, rules, like, there's so many things that can, if, ands, or buts, and stipulations, when I want to just, I just want rules. Like, I want parameters to operate under. And here's the thing. First thought, and again, I'm just giving you first thought. Like, I'm a positive person. I usually am. My first thought was, well, what did you think would happen? That's my first thought, Brent, because
yeah,
there must be a bunch of people around Nico that think his value is exceptionally high. Listen, do I understand his ceiling could be really high? Yes, 100%. But like, if I literally looked up, I got it in front of me right now, the top 50 passers in college football last year. Nico's not even on this list. I didn't say top 15, Brent. I said top 50. Like, he's not on the list. So to get all that money and to be making all that money and now say, I want to double my salary, I want to go to $5 million from 2.4. 2.4 is a lot of money, dude. That's a lot of money. There's not a lot of schools that are going to pay you that kind of money. So my thing is, like, there's a bunch of people around Nico that made a bad decision, that tried to extract as much as possible and thought that they were going to be able to do it. And they swung and they freaking missed. And because of that, Nico's now going to have to go find another school. And this is the pettiest thing that anybody can say on the show, and I shouldn't say, I would love for Nico to end up at Georgia Southern. Like, that's so petty of me, I know, but like, I would just love for, like,
why there? So why did you say that one?
I'm just saying, like, somewhere so small that yes. It okay. Like, it's just obsolete because you tried to do this, because you tried to force somebody to, yeah. And listen, go try to make your money. I get it, but I'm just saying, you overplayed your hand so poorly and so badly. Like, I just kind of want you to get what you deserve a little bit. That's wrong, I know, but like, and he's not going to end up there, but I just thought it was the people around him did a really poor job advising him and representing him. And because of that, he's out of Knoxville, and tip of the cap to Knoxville, like, and the Tennessee. Like, I got more respect for Tennessee from that than anything else.
So the question I've wanted to ask you as it relates to this, when all this went down and over the weekend thinking about it, I was at a thing on Saturday and my son texted me. He's like, hey, did you see they were moving on from him? It's like, no, I hadn't seen that just yet. I hadn't caught up to that point just yet. was anyone in this situation in the wrong? Because I think the answer is no. It's just business.
Business. Now, if we were in the NFL, we would have free agency and you would have a contract. Like, you either have a contract or you become a restricted, you know, you could be a restricted free agent, unrestricted free agent, but you have a contract. And that's the thing, because we don't have a contract, he's not technically held to any standard. Like, that, he doesn't have to do anything. Now, I don't understand why Nico didn't show up. Like, it's not a good look. It's a bad look. He's not in the wrong, Brent, but he looks the worst by far. Like,
so that,
to me, Tennessee comes out looking like a stud. Like, you know what? You don't want to do this? So be it, bro. Like, you don't want to come to meetings? You're above the team? You think you're better than everyone else? You're the quarterback, dude. Like, the quarterback has to be the man. You have to be the leader. Whether you like it or not, you are in a position of leadership because of what you do on a snap-in, snap-out basis. Every single thing runs through you. Everything. The cadence when the ball snapped runs through you. A handoff, a throw. Everybody's relying on you, and you're and is dependent on you. And the fact that you don't show up and you're just like, nah, we're not going to show up. It's not whatever. And listen, that's not Nico. That's his people around him. 100%. Like, that's what they're telling him, because you don't know any different as a kid. You're listening to the people around you, which is exactly what I would have done too. But I don't think anybody's in the wrong. But to me, Tennessee looks like a boss, because they're like, hey, don't let the door hit you in the ace on the way out. Like, you ain't got to go home, but you got to get the freak up out of here. Like, Tennessee's like, we're bigger than this. We've lasted longer than this. And I mean, that's, to me, they came out looking like some studs.
That's the part that, and the reason I asked that question, because like, is Nico sort of in his right to say, hey, look, I think I'm worth a little more. I want to get paid a little more. Now, granted, if he had sort of actual representation, does this get handled behind closed doors and it never comes out? Or if it doesn't get handled, he probably likely enters the portal in December. I think that happens. But it's one of those where it's not like he's wrong. He can do that. But guess what? Josh Heupel can do what he did, and he can just say, peace.
Bye.
And his statement saying no one is bigger than the power T, very relevant. Like, that was so one of those. Maybe people look at this as the way of the world now, and it's another blip in the radar. Or maybe this is truly a sort of breaking point or seminal moment, larger picture moment within college football by them saying no. Because I'm sure people and behind closed doors that you don't know that's public, where players have said, hey, I need more. And the coach says, nah, you get what you get. And they said, okay. Or people leave, or all that stuff has probably happened. But the public nature of this and him now publicly saying, look, we're moving on, you're not welcome here, it might be a big time thing. And by the way, like you said with the Georgia Southern piece, is this almost going to be a thing where coaches around the Power Four look at this, look at each other, and look in the room and be like, let's take a stand?
Only one way that happens, though. Everybody else has got to stop. They can't go pay him. You can't go. Nobody else can jump in here and pay him $4 million. Like, you can't jump in and pay him $5 million. If you want to make a point together, then you've got to do that. And you've got to say that we're not going to do it. But it could be. It absolutely could be. It should be. Because, again, Nico got all that money coming out, Brent. He got so paid.
That's a big part of this.
He got broke off before he did anything and before he deserved anything. Right, wrong, or indifferent. You can get mad at me if you want by saying that comment. He didn't deserve anything. He didn't deserve the money he got to go to Tennessee. Tennessee gambled on him, gave him a ton of money, paid him a ton. That's why he went there. They gave him a ton of money. He came from California all the way over. And he hasn't panned out, honestly. Like, he hasn't. And you didn't pay that much money for, 2,600 yards and 19 touchdowns. Like, and if you want to look at SEC, he was like six games of 200 yards less. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. And here's another thing. First of all, there's been rumblings coming out of Tennessee about this for a while, but there's rumblings have been he's upset because there's no receivers. Like, his receiving core, they're not investing. Look how much money you're asking for. Like, You're trying to take all the money. How am I going to invest the money in receivers?
Yeah.
How am I going to invest the money in supporting cast and people around you when I'm having to pay you so much money? So, I mean, this can be something that changes sport. Like, this can be something that changes college sports. But I'm just saying that from watching this and seeing this, college sports needs to change. There needs to be a CBA. Like, this is getting to the point where we've got to learn they need representation. We need contracts that are two-sided. There's a lot of contracts out there. The school's liable. The player is not. Like, let's make them both liable. Like, let's get a governing body that makes this thing go. And Brent, I'm not saying this to protect coaches, and I'm not saying this to protect, right, you know, over the players. I want the game to be protected because this is the best game on the planet. Like, it's the coolest sport. It's the most fun sport. But because we're not governing it, because the NCAA sucks and doesn't do anything and doesn't make good rules, like, we don't have anything that's in place to fix this and to help this. And we could easily, if we'll get our brains together and make that happen. And then hopefully, you know, you don't have these things anymore and everybody kind of has a clear understanding of everything that's going on.
I've mentioned this before, but there was an article in the Atlantic, I think it was in like 2010, 2011, something like that, that basically went through the history of the NCAA and how all the things that they did were basically to the tax exempt piece of it, the, you know, making money without paying the player, like all these things.
They
worked
these things to a T.
The shadiness of all of it. And this is kind of like this has been 100 years in the making piece kind of thing. But what you're talking about involves them saying that they're employees, that they're being paid to play football. And that's it's reality, but it's also the legality, I think, and part of that. Now, I'm not the legal expert in this world when it comes to that.
Well, I'm not smart enough to, consider that. But Brent, spin this forward and let's talk about where he could go. Here's the thing. I want you to consider this. Okay. I'm a team builder. This is what I'm doing. All my team, building my team. First of all, it's hard enough to massage a quarterback room right now. And we're going to talk to Marcus Freeman, and Brent wasn't able to meet you. We caught up with him earlier, so I'm doing the interview. But, like, talking to Marcus Freeman and about building this and continuity and recruiting. Well, I got to do this. And now, guess what? How much – you don't want to rock the boat. You don't even want to announce who the starter is because you don't want them to leave. Well, guess what? Wherever Nico goes, you're going to rock the boat. Yep. And if you're going to pay that much money, Brent, you're guaranteed to be the starter. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Yep. So whoever's willing to bring in Nico, you got to realize it's going to wreck your leadership right away because now they got to get to know the new guy. They're trusted with the other guy. And despite what they think about him, like, love, right, wrong, and different, you've got to do that now from spring ball on, or you could have been doing it the other way. I don't think it's good timing for that, man. I don't think it's
horrible timing.
I don't think the stars are going to align for Nico and he's going to go. I don't think he's going to go get what he wants. I really don't. I think it's going to come way down. And I think his best offers probably would have been at Tennessee. And his best chance to make the most money in the future would have been at Tennessee because he could have balled out and then maybe balled out the next year or just gone straight to the NFL because he could after this year, after his third year. But it's just a tough spot to be in now for everyone else who decides to jump on board and recruit whoever those schools are.
The timing is the most important piece of it because if he puts his name in the portal in December, he's on the list with John Mateer and some of these other guys that, like, what the Mensa kid got paid like crazy to go to Duke. Like, he gets that money.
But you got a spring ball to go in and get acclimated and earn it and do it. Instead of now you've gone through spring ball with your squad, with your team. We got to earn it. We got to earn it on the practice field. Y'all got to bring it every day. Wait a minute, coach. You just paid him to come in. Like, you're telling me you love me and you want me to compete and work hard, but you just replaced me like that? Like, why am I working for you? Dude, it's not good timing at all. But you got any spots for the Nico landing? Where would you I've got one that overwhelmingly I think is the number one, number two, number three spot, and then everybody else is in a pile.
Is it North Carolina?
Nope.
My thought in terms of looking at who's been transfer QB Central for a while is, and I'm kind of upset that I had to have a day job meeting and or class today and couldn't make the interview, but Notre Dame is one that comes to mind in terms of consistency of using guys that have been 1 year starters.
Brent's a professor, you know, in his real life, in his day job, and he's super smart. To me, you're overanalyzing the piss out of this. Brent, who has dropped Cheddar in free agency? We had him on this show.
My first thought was the U, but they actually have a quarterback. And the one you're mentioning at Texas Tech, I think is who you're talking about.
Bro.
I think they like their quarterback, though. I think they like their guy.
They might like their guy. And again, I'm not saying that they don't. And he played pretty good. He was better than Nico, by the way. Numbers-wise, definitely better than Nico.
Yep.
But I'm just saying, that's a team when you talk about money.
You're talking about Baron Morton, by the way.
Yes, correct. Like that's a team when you're talking about money. Again, the salary cap doesn't start till July. Like that's when it starts counting for real. So again, Stanford kid jumps in. Texas Tech says, "Hold, how much? Okay, we'll sign that. That's easy." And they've spent over $10 million in free agency, and they picked guys that big name guys that would have gone to anywhere in the country and spent a lot of money. So to me, like that overwhelmingly, I said, that's number one because they're willing to spend resources. You know, does it make you sexier too at Texas Tech and the new facilities and more shine, more eyeballs? Does it get you more dubs? You know, and if that's the case, you know, we've got billionaire backer that's been throwing money around like it's Tic Tacs.
Nico, this is Bill Belichick. Tom Brady won a lot of Super Bowls with me. Every year he took less money. I think you should come to. Can you imagine how that conversation works if that actually happens? But
and Bill Belichick, you know, he's going to run it like a pro style, like.
But he also cares about team and.
I'm about to say, Bill's a team guy. Listen, you better whoever goes and plays for Bill Belichick, you better have some tough skin, brother. Like this ain't your country club atmosphere, dude. Like you better be a hard rock. You better be a one. You better not think you're a one. You better be one of them. Like, yep. And they haven't invested any money yet. Like they're one of those teams that has a ton of money. They've talked about, you know, raising their budget to 20 something million dollars and being able to spend money. So that to me is a name that I saw come up.
West Coast teams also too, like anybody on the West Coast. I think
that's where he's from. He's from, yep, California. You know, UCLA has, you know, Stacy Ford, who worked at Nico's high school that now does the player stuff at UCLA. So that makes sense. But all, yep, we've heard about UCLA for the last several years is they don't have any money. So I don't know how they're going to.
Players and team and not very good. And that's, you're going into a worse situation. I don't know
they're going to drop money. And does Nico want to go win? USC is another one that's going to get mentioned with Lincoln Riley. But again, top-notch recruits coming in the next year. Maiava, whatever his name, like that guy that came in.
Jaden Maiava.
Yeah, Maiava did good. He was 3-1, mm-hmm, I think, as a starter down the stretch. His TD played interception. Well. He wasn't like Lincoln quarterbacks I've seen in the past. I'm not gonna lie, he wasn't that good. Right. But he did well enough to win. And so, I mean, listen, Notre Dame. You said too. I think there's a bunch of potential, you know, landing spots for him. But I don't think this is as easy as plug and play and. I'm just going to go buy my quarterback because this time of the year is got to be the worst time of the year, period.
Speak one perspective we haven't touched on that I think is probably actually universal in terms of their – I mean, maybe not. I'm sure it's not every fan, but the fan perspective. My guess, and you think about college football now with – and much like college basketball, like you have a new team. You basically have a new team every year in college basketball. But football with the – you know, movement of players so much now, the sort of I'm the fan of the team. I cheer for Georgia. I cheer for Tennessee. I cheer for USC. And whoever's on the team, great. I'm supporting them. And if those are kids that want to be there, great. I'm supporting them. Do you think, I'm assuming, based upon my own sort of little bit of research that I've been able to do, that the Tennessee fan base is basically like, pound sand, dude. See you later. You're all about the tea. We don't want you.
I think that's a component. Here's the bottom line is, and again, I played at University of Georgia, before NIL. So my thought process is probably a little bit different. But if you took Nico off the team, if you took all of Tennessee players away, all college football players away, and you took all D2 players and you stuck them in those shoes, those people are going to cheer just as hard. If everybody played against if D2 was Division 1 and that's all you had, everybody would be jacked about what they had. Like, it's the truth, man. Like, they're passionate about their schools, and yes, they love their players, but their players change every year, and more so now than they ever have. And so I hope Tennessee fans are excited. They should be. The fact that your coach can do that and say, hey, we might take a step back. We might. But what I do know is that we did the right thing for our school, for our university, and moving forward, you know, setting a precedent for our team. Like, listen, this is not how we're going to do things. And you're honestly, again, in the end, it wasn't worth it. That he was not worth that contract. The way he played was not worth that contract. And that's not being rude to the kid. It's the truth. If you watched, if you listen, you could have put a lot of quarterbacks in that system with that run game and that defense, and they would have won a lot of games. I mean, but he did good. But besides the first game, there was no real wow moments. And so I think Tennessee fans are excited because I think Heupel's comments, and I think Heupel got infinitely more respect. Like, I think they went from like liking Josh Heupel to being like, that's my guy. Like, that's my dude. And again, they won. The university won this thing, and fans love their teams regardless, man, because those players come and go more than ever.
Because this is not like the NBA where Dallas trades Luka and the entire fan base revolts against the team.
They should have. Because,
you know, they basically have in a way, but it's not like that. They love the power T. And the point you just made was the question I was going to ask you. Did they maybe just get better? And much like we talked about when we did all those QBs, hey, did you get better, yes or no? And one team specifically we talked about that I remember, Georgia. You might not be more talented at QB, but you might be better and have better production at quarterback. Tennessee might not be more talented, but if their quarterback functions within the system that we know does things.
It's a great system. It's a difficult system to stop. And if you get the right guy, the kid a couple years ago.
Hendon Hooker.
I mean, Hendon Hooker's numbers versus Nico's numbers. He's way closer to Joe Milton than he was Hendon Hooker, for gosh sakes. Hendon Hooker was, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, period. Like, he lit the world on fire. I mean, he's in the top 10 of everything. Nico's not in the top 50, like I told you, in the NCAA passing. So I think it could happen if you find the right guy, and maybe that's why he did in the end. Maybe he literally can look at his roster and go, guys, I'm just telling you, we might take some lumps, but this dude's not that far off. And here's the decisions you make nowadays. If it's not that far off, but it's $5 million, like, it's not worth it. And sometimes you get a little bit worse because of it, but no, I'm interested to watch because Tennessee's defense was so good a year ago. That will take a little bit of a step back. So quarterback, obviously, the run game has been good regardless of who's played quarterback too, and they find guys. So interesting, super interesting. A lot of things we're going to look at this and look back and go, okay, who won? Who got out ahead? Who was right? Who was wrong? I think we are always naturally going to do that.
I also go back to what Dan Mullen talked about when we interviewed him. I'd love to just have know in January that's my team.
Yeah.
And that there'd just be one portal window. Because if there was just one portal window, all of this could have been avoided. And he would have either gone in the early one or just chose to not play, which he's definitely not going to.
And there should be one. There's no reason whatsoever there should be two. I mean, it doesn't make sense. You know, and also the timing of the first one, like during bowl season, what are we doing? Like, that's the stupidest thing ever too. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to be addressed. It can be addressed. But I did get to catch up with Marcus Freeman earlier. And we want you to take a listen to this interview. This is why we feel like Notre Dame's in pretty good hands. I mean, they've got a real dude at the helm. That's a leader, knows who he is, knows what he is. And a lot of interesting things I think you'll find in this interview. All right, we got Marcus Freeman, coach of Notre Dame, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Obviously, you guys have seen him. You guys have heard about him. Marcus, I think one of the most probably – first of all, let's start here, actually. The name of the podcast is See Ball, Get Ball. You can appreciate that, I feel like, more than anybody. Defense, you played defense. One of the few head coaches in all of college football that played defense and hunted. So I figured you would actually like that name.
I love it, man. I love it. I got to stop it real quick and ask about your wife. How's your wife doing?
She's doing great. She's good. Doing great. We have learned a lot. We are learning a lot. She's doing good, Marcus. We're learning a lot. You know, it's not something that I've ever thought about or of dealing with and going through, but, you know, God only puts on you what you can handle. And I can say this, though, I wish the hardest part about it, I think, and you can relate to this, and I'll talk to you about that with your team. It's not me. Yeah. You know, like when I broke my neck, it was me, and it was so much easier to deal with. But like when it's not you and you can't fix it, like I realize she's God's before she's anybody else's, before she's mine. And so having to strap in and be like, all right, God, like teach me what I need to know, put me where I need to go. And that's probably been the hardest part, but she's one day at a time. I see more and more glimpses of my baby doll and smiling. And now I will say this, the filter has gone away, which is fantastic. Like she used to be so calculated and so like never say anything, ruffle feathers. And now she might say something like, what just happened? I just got slapped. Thank you for asking. I appreciate the prayers. And I know you texted me about it. That was really nice. But let's get to you, man. Speaking of my wife, speaking of this, I'm watching the college football semifinals last year. And my wife, it pans to a picture of you. And she goes, And I go, what do you mean? I said, what was that for? She goes, he's like in really good shape. She was like, I'm not used to seeing like coaches in really good shape. So I didn't necessarily care for the Marcus, but do we have a fitness regimen? I mean, are you psychotic about it to make sure that you stay in shape so you stay at your best?
I am. And for multiple reasons, right? One is it's stress release for me. I'm a routine guy like most of us. You know, I'm an early morning, get in the weight room before your day gets used up by other things. You know, during the season, during spring ball, when things are crazy, I'm more take advantage of the 45 minutes or whatever you have to get in as much as you can. Now, in the off seasons, I'll add a little bit of weight to the bar, right, and try to make myself feel better. But, you know, right now we're just in spring ball, so it's all right, we're going to get as many reps depending on what I'm doing that day. But, again, it's good for the brain. It's good for the soul. It is also just making sure my players know that I'm going to be in that weight room.
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm punching that clock, too. Y'all ain't the only one. I do think it's interesting that coaches get out of shape and then they try to – and they get – some of them get bigger and bigger. And I do think as a player, like, I respect you more – not respect you more, but when you tell me to do something and you're disciplined and you're going to do it, I think it matters. But I think the coolest thing, Marcus, about you and watching you – I've never seen somebody get the job and I've never seen so much happiness from players. Like – how did that set the tone for your Notre Dame career? Like, and everybody, we all saw it, man. Like the players' genuine love when you got announced as the guy, they went nuts. Like, how did that set the tenure for your job?
Well, I think it was humbling for me. Half of those guys had an intimate relationship with me because I was their defensive coordinator. We spent endless amount of time together that year before I was named head coach. But the other half chose to embrace me the way they did. And that meant the world to me, right? That those guys on offense, those special teams guys said, you know what, we are accepting you as our head coach. And again, when I think about that moment, I think it's two groups, right? The team and this coach that trust each other. They trust me to be their head coach and to lead them to wherever we were going after that. And you know what? I trust every single one of them. And I have a strong love for that group and obviously all the players on our team. But it was a moment that sometimes you wish you can go back and revisit. It was an awesome moment that I'll never forget.
That was a cool moment. What's harder, man? You got, you know, 100-plus 18 to 24-year-olds or – going home to six kids. Like what's harder for Marcus Freeman?
Yeah, it's definitely the six kids at home because these guys here, they know me as coach, right? And they trust me. And at the end of the day, sometimes coaches can say things where there's a little bit of blind obedience, right? Yes, sir, I got you. Whereas home, I'm either dad or I'm just Marcus to my wife, right? And that you're not the head coach when you're at home. And I probably spend more time with the guys here than I do at home. And there's not probably, I do. And so, you know, when I go home, sometimes you want to be the fun dad, the dad, hey, dad's home for an hour or two, whatever, how much time I get with them. But there's also part of being a parent that isn't always fun, that you have to address the issues. And that's probably the thing I've learned more than anything else, right, is that my home life and my work life, I often say it's a blend. Like, there's no balance. You can't balance it. You got to blend it. So my players come to our house and our family comes to the office all the time. But you know what? The thing I've learned is when there's an issue and there's a call to be a parent, that you have to put the parent hat on right away or the husband hat on right away, because at the end of the day, that needs your attention. And that's what's most important.
How do you do that? Like, there's a lot of people out there, Marcus, that are like, they're busy. They're going from here to the next thing, to the next thing. They're chasing, they're working for money. They're working their time. How do you maximize that time? How do you step in the door? Because I think one of the things I always talk about, like, I want to make a memory every day. Like, how do I make a memory? How do you maximize your time with your family? Because Notre Dame football does get the majority of your time.
Yeah, I probably should start by saying I fail often, right? I'm not the perfect father and perfect husband, but you try to be intentional. You try to be intentional and present with your family when you are home. That's probably more important than anything. If you go home and you're physically there, but mentally you're not there, then you failed your kids. You failed that opportunity that you have. So I try to be intentional. I try to put my phone down. I try to listen to what my kids want to talk about. And ultimately, you got to listen to whatever your wife, or feel like she's got to feel like I'm listening to the things that she's telling me. And so, as I said to start, I'm not the best all the time, but it's something I intentionally want to work on and keep doing.
What do you like to do? What do y'all like to do for downtime? Or what do? Do you play cards? Do you play golf? Like, what's your hobbies that like get you away from things that you like to kick it and just relax?
You know, me and my wife try to do date night as often as we can. If we can get away for an hour, we finally got kids that are old enough to babysit and say, hey, you got
game changer.
We're going to go out and have dinner and a drink. We'll go do that. That's important that me and her have our alone time when we can. And then, you know, the kids are always in activities. They wrestle, they play football. My daughters are gymnasts. And so, when I can be dad, I want to be there. You know, our oldest boy, he's 17. So, you know, sometimes he didn't want to hang out with his dad and mom too often, but the little ones, if they want to watch a Disney movie, we'll watch a Disney movie or be there. Cards. That's something I do with the coaching staff. We do that a lot of time on the plane.
What's the game? What's the game in cards?
Depends on the people you play with. Right. And so I love to play a little Boo-Ray.
You know, what's Boo-Ray?
I'll have to teach you one day, but you got to bring some money. But that's the thing we got. We just, you know, we can do.
If you want to play spades, I will bring it. I'm ready for that.
We can play spades. We can play euchre. We can play tonk. It's all, you got to learn how to play all the games because you don't know your audience. So if you want people to play, you got to be able to play multiple games. But I'll play some spades with you.
All right. We'll get on the spades. I think spades is one of the most, that's all we did in high school, man. Like, we literally, and just counting the cards, knowing what's been played, like, and then talking trash, you know, taking the cards and being able to slap them. I think it's always.
So this will tell me a lot about you. So are you a joker, joker, deuce? Are you a joker, joker, ace? You're no jokers. You're bidding. How do you play?
So you're talking about with spades?
Yeah.
So we've never played with jokers. Okay. So that's all new. Right. We just play ace high. So.
Okay. All right.
I'm not the, and we don't do, and we do left of the dealer. And a lot of people do low club. Like, we do left of the dealer starts. Okay. I'm a big low guy though. I go low a lot. Like, I love to force the action when I'm only getting one or two, then I might as well just go ahead and get 100 points and win zero. Well,
you're an underbidder is what we call, huh? You're underbidding a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, good to know. But no, I think it's good for, I think it's good to get that time too with you. I love, first of all, you're talking about getting date night with your wife. That's amazing. Prioritizing her, prioritizing family. That's great. And then what about, like, we talked about this the other day, actually, on the show. Like, who do you scroll through? Like, when you're talking, coach, I'm not going to skip you. Like, when Gino Auriemma is talking, like, I'm going to listen to him. Like, when Nick Saban was talking, like, I'm going to stop and listen to him. Now some of the younger coaches, like Dillingham, like, I'm going to listen. Who are those guys on your timeline that you're scrolling through? I don't care what sport it is. I don't care who it is. Like Rory McIlroy obviously had a big day yesterday that probably, you know, you probably take something away for leadership for your team, but who are those people and things that you're learning from?
Yeah, I think, and I'm going to answer your question in a second, but when you think of Rory McIlroy, the first thing I thought of, delayed gratification, right? And he's a guy that's been so close for so long. And even you look at yesterday on the 18th hole, right? And you missed that putt to win it and is able to regroup and win it on the first playoff hole. That is such a sign of delayed gratification. And I love that for him and just being a fan of greatness. You know, me and Coach Saban have spent some time, you know, on the phone, getting to know each other. There's so much wisdom. I spent a lot of time talking to basketball coaches, right? As you said, Gino Auriemma was somebody I talked to, but our basketball coaches here, Neil Ivey and Micah Shrewsbury and John Shire is a guy that I often talk to because, you know, there's only so many college football coaches that, you know, you have that type of relationship with. Sometimes it's viewed as competition, but, you know, I like to talk to some NFL guys, but also more importantly, a lot of basketball coaches. I like to really study some of the things they do.
Yeah, I think we can learn from anyone. So that's always good. But what do you implement with your team for leadership, and how do you grow this? And is it harder, you know, nowadays with NIL and all the things that have been going on?
Yeah, I think it's harder, one, because I told them the last week in a meeting, there's so many, you can communicate with people in so many ways now that you couldn't in the past. But I think isolation and quietness and being alone is probably more prevalent right now than ever before. And in order to have that intimate relationship with your teammates that I believe it takes to have success, you have to be intentional about that. And you have to be willing to put your phone down and spend time together. You know, there's days that I want to talk to them about what I believe a leader is. Like this is what I believe a leader is. And not everybody wants to be a leader, right? If this is my definition of what a leader is, then I don't know if everybody truly wants that. But we all need to have intimate relationships with each other where we can be authentic and not say things that maybe the person wants to hear or just, you know, appeasing to the crowd. And so if we can continue to have that authenticity and intimate relationships, I believe that great teams have that. I showed the team a clip of Paige Beckers. She was on maybe Good Morning America or one of those things after they won the national championship. And she said something about people say that UConn, this UConn basketball team, had great friendships. She used the terms friendships, right? And I showed the team that and I said, I don't care if it's called friendships or called relationships or called intimacy. Like, that's to me what it takes to achieve great things. It's more than just X's and O's and talent. It's that relationship that you must have with your teammates.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that I noticed quickly on campus was like versus respected. And I talk about that a lot with my team. Like, I'm not trying to get likes. And I know this world is a lot about likes, but like when we come back to reunions now, it's not like, oh, I like that cat. It's like that dude would hit you in the mouth. That dude showed up every single day. And, you know, trying to understand, like, I want the respect. And to respect your teammates is different than to always like them. And that means you got to say some things that might be uncomfortable sometimes. And got to be okay with that. And some people aren't. You're right. And some people are. And even the coaches, man, like some of the stuff the coaches said to us, I look back and I'm like, dang, I needed that. Like, mm-hmm. I needed to hear that. And I think it's difficult. You know, I think so many people complain about our sport. It's the best sport on the planet. College football is the best. Like, I love it. And I know it's shifting. And you see, you know, story obviously out of Tennessee. And I'm not going to ask you about, like, how you handle this or stuff. But, like, The rules that are in place now, Marcus, like I think about the NFL. If you have free agency, like you have free agency, you have a contract where both sides are binding. Like you have the contract, I have a contract. And I know we have some of that in the sport, but like, how do we fix it where your roster is secure for the spring, which you're going through, which is a tough point to build to the season where it just makes it easier? Or how would you fix some of this, man? Because some of this is just crazy and it's madness. And I don't think it helps the sport. I don't think fans are excited about it. I don't think coaches and players are excited about it all the time.
Yeah, I think one of the issues more than money is probably the ease of transferring, right? And I think there's reasons to be able to have the transfer portal and for guys to transfer. But I think right now there's such ease to transfer when things aren't going your way, right? And the side of transferring your new coaching staff, or hey, you want to look for a better opportunity to play, you've gotten your degree, or all those different things. I think there's really a lot of pros of the transfer portal. But when you look for the transfer portal to find an easier way, and I think that's where it goes against what I believe college football is for, and that's to help young people continuously be self-sufficient when they're done. And as you just said, when you go to the NFL, you sign a contract, and no matter if you like your role or you like the money you're making, you have a job to do, and you have to do that job. And right now, at times, people can leave a situation because they don't like their role, or they don't like maybe how much money they're making, or they're uncomfortable. And so that's not real life. Like, when you leave college, you're going to have to be self-sufficient and know how to handle whatever is required of you, no matter what the circumstances are. So we got to continue to promote that in college athletics is being self-sufficient individuals when you're done with it.
It's different for sure. I remember going down the road, man, I went 50 minutes from my house and I was homesick, and mm-hmm. I was like, holy cow, because it's a new environment. Well, and then I pushed through that, man, and I got to know where my teammates, and I got to know where everything was. And you're like, all right, this ain't that bad. Like, I got to give it a chance. And I think when you do that, obviously you do start to grow up a little bit, and you start right. to be comfortable getting uncomfortable. And I think it's a good thing for kids to have to experience. So you need more of that. When I watch you coach this past year, I thought, man, you guys were always aggressive. Like, I love the fact that, like, fourth down, it didn't seem optional most of the time. You're like, yeah, okay, push the button. Like we're going for it. Fake punts throughout the season. What you did against Georgia in the playoffs, like having a plan, preparing for that. Like, I mean, you hire a new analytics guy, you know, this off season, and like, are you all in on analytics? Are you all in on that part of the game and the numbers side of it, and fourth downs and expanding in that direction?
Yeah, I am. When I have a strong conviction of it, right, is that I don't always go by what the book says and says go for it or kick a field goal or punt it. There's a feel for how the game's going to that you have to take into consideration when you make that decision. But the other thing is the confidence you have in your offense getting the first down. I had a lot of confidence in terms of on fourth and short situations, our offense was going to find a way to get that first down. Now, it didn't happen every time. We weren't perfect, but it was there by me to say, you know what, Coach Denbrock, we're going to go for it if it's fourth and whatever the number was. And so I think you always have to be forward thinking. I think you always have to utilize the science and the numbers and the evidence that is presented to you. And I try to use it as an advantage. Again, I'm not 100% relying on it, but if we can find a way to get a first down because we do something that's forward thinking or innovative, I'm all for that. I want to always continue to push the needle in terms of giving this program a chance to have success.
How long did you practice the play that you ran versus Georgia? Did y'all practice that all year long? Because perfect situation, like, again, defensively, I'm thinking you're going for it. I'm aggressive. And then all of a sudden, I mean, you running teams out, like running the kicking team out, like being able to do that, like you make me communicate, you make things helter skelter. So obviously there's a reason you did it and it's super smart. How long did y'all practice that?
I mean, we practiced it, I think probably the last week of the season and then moved forward with it. But it was finding the right situation to call it. And it happened to present itself there versus Georgia. And I think Kirby said it after the game. They weren't. So he's seen that. I mean, he's a smart coach. He knows you got time. What you're trying to do is try to create panic, right? Get them to use a timeout or you know, try to get them with 12 guys on the field. They didn't panic. They got 11 guys on the field. Ultimately, one of their guys made a mistake. He jumped off sides, and we were able to take advantage of it. But a lot of respect to Coach Smart and the job he's done. He didn't panic one bit. You can't get that guy. But you know what? Our guys performed it. They were able to get him to jump and get a first down, and the drive continued.
He didn't panic, but his players did. Like his player made the mistake, but I think when the position in the game was awesome because you're up by multiple possessions. You know the clock is your friend. You wanted them to take a timeout. I'm assuming you probably didn't assume they would jump, but it obviously was good, dude. Watching, I would have gone for fourth down and one every time too with Riley. Like, just a dude, man. Like, just a, and I don't think people understood how good he was until they got to the playoffs. And maybe that Ohio State 75 play where he ran it 70 times on the first drive and was puking on the sidelines. Like, I don't think people understood. Listen, people see a kid that's light-skinned. I've been there, done that. He's not athletic. That dude's athletic. Like, he and he ran to space really well. He saw things. Like, he saw the game, to me, very running back-esque. And I don't think people understood. Like, fourth and one, to me, was automatic. Like, you didn't have a decision. This year, do you have a decision? Or is it – I mean, how does it change this year with your offense and the quarterback spot just going through spring and what you've seen so far?
Well, they always say trust is earned, right? Like, we got to continue with our offense. We'll earn that trust in me to be able to call that. And that's why you have those type of situations in practice, right? What are we going to do? What's going to give us an advantage? You know, being from the defensive side of the ball, any team that can run its quarterback, it adds another – it's a plus one to the count. And so defensively, are you going to go zero versus this quarterback possibility of a quarterback run, knowing that if all of a sudden he breaks a tackle, he's gone? Or are you going to say, hey, we're going to try to stop the quarterback run with one less in the box? And again, like, Riley was a guy that when the game was on the line, I had the utmost confidence in him having the ball in his hands. He was just going to make the right decision. And then he's such a competitor. I think it was the Georgia game. I don't remember, but he's running up the sidelines. And it was, I think, a third down. And he jumps over top and gets flipped over defender. And I'm like, that's not the position you want your quarterback in. But he gets a first down, gets up, hands the ball to official, and let's keep going. And so there was such a conviction I had in him as a competitor, him executing that. And again, with this new off, not the new offense, but this new personnel in terms of who's going to be the quarterback and what we're going to do offensively. Again, we got to earn that trust through practice, but there's a strong feeling that we're going to be aggressive on fourth now.
Yeah, no, he definitely earned that. And I think just the style that you guys play with the ground and pound and physicality has been fun, because it's kind of swung a little bit now. Like, we went all spread, all speed, all fast. And now it feels like the game's coming back more to more defense, more physicality. Like, I think defenses has learned how to handle the spread a little bit more. But do you think it's kind of swinging back the other direction with a little bit more power football and smash mouth?
I think it's really each program. I got a strong belief in you design – your offense or defense to the strengths of your players, right? And there's so many smart individuals in this world that have so many great plays and so many great defenses, but you got to fall in love with what your guys do well and your personnel. We have a really good offensive line. We've had good tight ends, and you know, we got some quarterbacks, and you know what? Now we're getting developing the wideouts to be in a position that we believe Notre Dame needs. And so, again, our system is our system. Our philosophies on offense are philosophies, but how do we tailor some of the details of the schematics and how we call the game to do what our players do well? That, to me, is what great coaches do.
Yeah, and Greathouse came on in the playoffs, dude. He was awesome. So what do you think going through spring now? Like, what's the identity of your team, or where are you at? I'm not asking like for what you're going to be, you know, for the college football playoff and what y'all want to look like, but what have you been impressed with this team so far through spring, and what do you think they're going to be able to do, and some things you really want them to continue to work on?
Yeah, I think defensively we have a new defensive coordinator and Chris Ash. And you know, when I interview Coach Ash, I've known him for a while, but the biggest thing was I wanted him to pick up where we were at. We had a really good defense the past couple of years, and our defense coordinator, Al Golden, went to the Cincinnati Bengals. And, you know, Coach Ash has done a great job in terms of picking up where we were at and finding ways to enhance it. And every coach, coordinator has different details that they emphasize. And so our guys are really improving from practice one to practice 12 in terms of understanding what he wants offensively. You know, we're still going to be a team that has to be able to run the ball. But I think we have a quarterback, like whichever one is the guy that truly can make every throw, can really throw the ball, but probably isn't a run like the runner that Riley Leonard was. And so how do we make sure we can keep defenses honest offensively by being able to spread them out and throw the ball if we need to, but also knowing that we have a stable running backs, a really good offensive line and tight ends that can run the ball when necessary.
You say running backs. I want to know, Marcus Freeman in the hole with Mr. Love, are you getting that sucker on the ground? Because I know he didn't get as many touches, so probably didn't get the fanfare because of the yardage. But, like, even when he got hurt wearing the knee brace down the stretch last year, like, he's still hurdling people. He's still – like, that dude, man, you getting him on the ground, Coach?
Listen, Matt, you know, I don't want to say like I'm this old guy, but there was a lot more two-back ISOs, you know. Like, I'm used to taking on a fullback, spill the guy right to you. Jay Love is a freak, man. He is athletic. He probably would jump over top of me if I was going to tackle him. If I went high, he would find a way to make me miss. But he's way more athletic than I ever was. And, again, he can also put his shoulder down and run you over. Like, that's the tricky part about Jeremiah is that if you want to go low, he's going to jump over top. If you want to go high, he's going to put his shoulder down and you over. Like, he has so many different traits and skill sets. And then guess what? If you let him break loose, I haven't seen somebody catch him. I mean, he has that type of speed. And so our challenge is to say, okay, how many ways can we get the ball in his hands without, you know, we owe him to be able to make sure we don't use every rep he has in his body in college. Like, he's got an NFL career and we got a stable of backs, right? How do we find ways to rotate those guys in there and get the most out of Jeremiah, but also utilize the guys we have in that room?
Well, you did that last year with Price too. And when you watch the national champions, I think Travion was better because he had Judkins last year. Like, right. That was you definitely saw a better version of him down the stretch. He stayed healthier. So it's kind of one of those things that you kind of got to sell to your players probably, because I know they want the rock and they want the ball and all the stuff that comes with it. But when you talk about like that, like those conversations, are those conversations well received nowadays? Or because I'm in your era more of football, and these kids are different. Like, they are 100% different, and they got to know you care about them, and they got to know the why now. Like, it's more prevalent than ever. Like, they need to know the why. Like, can you sit down and have those conversations with them about that?
100%. And that's, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's if they understand why, and all guys aren't going to agree with the decisions you make, but that blind obedience, you know, my father was in the Air Force for 26 years and I grew up with blind obedience. You know, when adult says something, it's yes or no, sir. But I think these guys now, you got to tell them why, and to be able to show them what's your ultimate goal. Everybody's going to say, I want to get to the NFL. Well, here's things that are going to help you have a longer career. Right. The ability to say you're not going to get every carry, but it's not going to hurt you in terms of NFL. It's going to actually help you as you look the longevity of your career. Defensively, being able to rotate guys, like, I know you want to play every snap, but we got really good guys in this program and we want the best version of you. You playing 20 snaps in a row isn't going to be the best version of you. Let's rotate you every third, fourth series to keep guys fresh. And as long as they understand why, and you tell them beforehand. Right. You don't do it in the midst of a game. Like, to me, that's where young people can get frustrated. If you tell them why, right, and you tell them this is the way we're doing things, they know, no matter if they like it or dislike it, they'll understand. Right. It's the uncertainty to me that really frustrates young people, but all types of people.
Yeah. Well, that's great. No, I think, Coach, it's fun to watch. Like, last question for me, like, what did last year do for your squad? Like, because I say that because Coach Rick at Georgia, when I was with him, we had a big win against Tennessee. It was like, it proved to us we could do it. Like, we were like, okay, like, we can do this. We can compete. We can go, you know, do it on a national level on a big stage. Like, what have you seen from your guys after making a run last year, like, and being one of the best in all of college football? Not just talking about it, like, We were there at the very end. Like, what has that done for Notre Dame and your program?
You know, I think for the guys here, it's that belief and that understanding that we know what it takes, right? We've been there before. We've played against the best of the best, and we beat the best of the best at all different places. And so it's not a surprise. It's understanding that, okay, this is the expectations and we can get it done. It takes a lot of work, right? But also, I think the other thing is understanding, no matter who you play, if you don't prepare the right way mentally and physically, the lesson we also learned from last year is you can get beat by anybody, right? So to have that right approach as you for every opponent is so important. And so I think it's done great things for this team currently. I always say, like, last year, we don't start over. You got to utilize those experiences to be the foundation for 2025. Like, that's the new foundation for us. And even in recruiting, the ability for recruits to see Notre Dame football playing at the highest level, performing in the playoffs, winning those big games on national TV, to me, made sure that the young people say, okay, Notre Dame football can be national champions. And it's something we've always talked about, but you know what? You've seen it. And now it's about getting back to work, developing this group of individuals to creating its identity. And then ultimately you got 12 guaranteed to go out there and perform.
Kind of got to deprogram it a little bit. Not deprogram as much as this ain't last year. This is not whatever we're doing now and going through spring, obviously. Step one, even though right now they're bored out of their minds, hitting each other over and over and over again. What did you think about that, by the way? I lied. I'm going to ask you one more. Like, Deion, as a player, like he said, you know, we want to play, we want to practice against, and Fran Brown stepped in. As a player, man, I'm literally, the player inside of me goes, heck yes. Like, it would be so much fun to hit someone else besides my own guy over and over and over again. Like, we're going to keep score more. Like, it's going to matter more. What did you think about that?
Competitors want to compete, right? And when I heard that, there's no doubt about it. We're all competitors. We want to compete. If we can compete against another opponent, that would be tremendous. You know, Coach Prime and Fran Brown, they did a great job of kind of getting that out there. We'll see if the NCAA kind of changes the rules. And again, we'll take advantage of it. But how do we create this competitive environment where, you know what, we're going to go out here and practice and we're going to hit the same guys again. But at the end of the day, you understand how important it is for you to get better today to maximize the opportunities that we have in front of us. And so that's my job as the head coach is, even if we come in or they come in with the mindset of, oh, here we go again, like we practiced two more times this week, we just played our spring game, how do I create an environment that they understand how important this practice is to ultimately helping us achieve our ultimate goal? And it's my job every day to show them, how important this day is. We always talk about every day is a Super Bowl here. No matter what the practice is, no matter what we're wearing, I'm going to find a way to create an environment that this is the Super Bowl, because ultimately this is so important to us reaching our full potential. And that's an everyday challenge of the head coach, but one that I look forward to.
Well, and that's why you guys have been successful, because you get up, you get in the weight room, you make it a priority, you take care of yourself, you take care of yourself, and you go out there. Here's the thing. Players always take on the identity of their coach. Like, they start to talk like him. You talked about Saban earlier. They're all Sabanized. You listen to him talk. Like, they sound like him over and over again. What you're building, coach, is fun to watch. You're doing it different. You're doing it you. And I think that's what's really cool to see somebody succeed, and to see a defensive coach, a defensive guy, man. Like, just to go be a head coach is really, really fun. So best of luck to you guys this season, and a great job so far in your 3 years in South Bend.
Man, much appreciated. Give your family my best, your wife my best, and it's always good catching up with you, man.
Appreciate you, my man.
Yep.